Testing 1, 2, 3. This is February 19th, 1992, interviewing Doris Dow at the Orioles Museum.
They lived. There was.
I guess the first thing we could start with is just some, you know, basic information about what your address is and where you were born and things like that.
My name is Doris Dow, and I live at 819 Morris River Drive, Lansing.
Okay.
And I worked at the Rio for 25 years.
Wow.
As a secretary.
When did you start?
Oh, God, I knew you was going to answer me that. It, 25 years from, I was going to look that up. 25 years from, well, we went out in 75.
Oh, so you were right there to land.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, we can
I think
that.
It was.
So 1950.
1950, okay.
So
yeah,
1950.
Yeah, I said that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, did you start right out of school at the Rio?
No, no. I was working, I had a dress store in Flint.
Oh.
And my mother was living alone, and she was, my brothers were in the service at the time.
Uh-huh.
Back during the war, my brothers were in the service. And my mother was alone, so she said, well, why don't you come to Lansing? And I said, oh, I just started a new business in Flint, a new, which they had sent me to New York to train as a manager for this dress store.
Oh, wow.
And yes, it was real nice. And I said, oh my God, what am I going to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that she was alone, you know.
And you were born in Lansing.
And I was born in Lansing. Yes, and there was nobody over in Flint that, other than the friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over to Lansing, went over to personnel, and talked to people at I knew over there in personnel, and I ended up going to work in the blueprint room at Rio.
As a secretary?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I worked as a blueprint operator. It was a huge machine that ran copies. I should say ran copies of blueprints.
I see.
It was called an Osled machine.
Huh. Oh, I never heard of this.
What machine? Interesting.
Yeah. It was called an Osled machine. Osled.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a big machine that you put, like a negative.
That
yeah.
Blue paper. The paper?
Well, no, that's the print that come out. That blue
that
paper,
comes out.
That
oh,
comes
I see.
Out. But you have what we call tracings. They're tracings of different parts of the trucks and pictures of the trucks, and
mm-hmm.
Like the engineers draw up in engineering. It's different parts and things like that. And for some reason or other, maybe they would have a request in the purchasing department to send out to the vendors. They had to have a print of that part that they were ordering. So the purchasing agents would call for a copy of such and such print, which was all numbered. They were all numbered. And they could look in their ledgers and find out what part that they wanted to order.
And then you'd get to work.
And then we would go to the vault, what we call the vault, and get the tracing, run off as many copies as what this purchasing agent needed, and send it to him through the mail.
Hmm.
Or a lot of times there was prints that were ordered through the foremans out in the factory. Maybe they were having problems putting the truck together.
They needed to get another look,
and maybe the dimensions were wrong, or maybe they'd have a big gap of 2 inches, and they were only supposed to have an eighth of an inch or something like that, and they'd get all these blueprints out and look at them and see what was wrong, you know, why weren't they fitting together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I stayed in there for, I don't know, probably 5 years.
How long did it take you to learn the job?
Oh, that's no problem.
No problem at all.
No problem learning
just
the job.
Just real quick.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And was it mostly girls working there in that shop, in that part of the shop?
Well, there was three of us, three girls, as I remember at that time, and one fellow working.
Doing the same thing?
No, we all had individual
different
jobs,
things
different things, but
in the
we all
work
in the same department.
I see.
Uh-huh. And it was real interesting when I think back on it now. It was real interesting, more interesting than what I thought at the time. You know, what I thought at the time was very boring.
Did they put you in there because of your experience with dressmaking?
No.
Patterns,
no,
blueprints?
No, no, there was just an opening.
I see.
That was where the opening was.
Because there is sort of a connection between them a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Well,
thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Well, no,
it wasn't bad.
That
it just
was,
happened.
That's where the opening was at the time that I went to work there.
Okay.
How did you happen to go to Rio? Because you had friends that worked there. And
my mother worked there.
My mother worked at Rio.
What did
yes.
she do?
Yes. She was a at that. Well, she was a contemptor operator at that
oh.
time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And so,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Early computers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she worked there. She worked there a number of years too. In fact, several in our family has worked there. My stepfather worked there. My brother, two of my brothers worked there, and I worked there. My husband worked there.
A real family.
Yes, Rio is known for being a family-oriented place.
Right.
Yeah. If you worked there, your mother worked there. Usually. Your sons, daughters, brothers, sisters.
Mm-hmm. Who so why would you think? Why would you say that was? Was it about something about the company or the people who worked there?
Because
well,
I think
it's
the
not
people,
true for all the other different companies. Something special. With
Rio. The people that worked for Rio really liked and enjoyed their jobs. I think most of them. They all complained. We all complained
oh,
at the time. But I really think the people that worked there enjoyed their job or enjoyed the other people
mm-hmm.
that worked there. And so they enjoyed their, and so they wanted their sons, or it was just one of those things that their sons or daughters were there. Just like my mother worked there, so she said, well, it's a good place to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you come there and see if you can get a job there? And mm-hmm. I just never give it another thought. If I could get to work there, well, that was better. My mother worked there,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And the pay was
good. The pay was basically the same as it was, or better, certainly better than working in a store downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Oldsmobile had its own group of people, you know. They had
their own family.
They had their own families working there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had a choice of working between Oldsmobile and Rio, and your mother worked, or your father or one way or another worked at Rio, that's where you're going to go.
Sure.
Out there. We felt
mm-hmm.
more comfortable. And I enjoyed working there
mm-hmm.
at the time. I enjoyed the people.
How long did you stay in the blueprint department?
I would say about 5 years I stayed there. And then, let's see, did they consolidate at that time? I don't know how my boss, I worked for Mr. Turner, Ralph Turner, at that time. Well, Mr. Turner has now passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there was an opening, that was called, this was all in engineering. I worked, my full time was in
engineering.
Yes. Blueprint was in engineering. But there was an opening in specifications for a secretary at that time there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked me if I would like to transfer over to there,
mm-hmm.
which was in the next department.
Had you gone to business school?
Yes, I had. Yes, I had been to a business school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you learned shorthand?
Yes.
And typing,
the shorting and typing, yes.
Here in Lansing?
Yes,
uh-huh. Acme Business College?
Acme Business College, yes.
Did you go right out of high school?
Right out of high
school,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I mean, that was more in my line and one thing and another. So I went in there, and that's where I was for the next 20 years. Was
oh, in
specifications.
You were there in specifications.
Yeah, I stayed right in specifications for the next 20 years.
So
yeah.
It must have been a good association, and you liked being in it.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh.
Did you work for one person, or did you work
oh,
for
no, we had several.
Mm-hmm.
Several different
No,
drivers.
What I meant was you had a boss that you answered to, or were you the secretary for lots of different bosses?
I had,
oh,
for just one at a time.
You were just one.
Just
the
one.
The personal secretary
for one,
one
person,
man,
yes.
Okay, who changed over the years.
Then,
yeah,
yeah, that position changed over a number
I see.
Over years.
Because
yeah.
sometimes secretaries, you know, work in a an office and they have lots of people,
yeah,
like in my department.
Do, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
we didn't have that.
Okay.
We didn't have
it was
that.
A personal secretary.
We had a secretarial pool. We didn't have a secretarial pool. No.
Okay.
Mm. Everybody, all the secretaries worked for just one boss at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We never had a secretarial pool.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of the men that you worked for? Assuming they
oh,
had men, women didn't have executive
no,
positions.
No, we didn't have women at that time. Oh my gosh. Let's see, I worked for Ralph Turner. And from Ralph Turner, I went to, I may not have this in the right order.
Oh, that's right.
Probably Stan Derminski, Bill Earl, Henry Coleman, and I think that was, I think Henry was the last one. Yeah. Yeah. He was the last one. But it was in specifications.
Mm-hmm. So you learned a lot about that.
Oh, yes.
Part of it being there 20 years.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. God forbid anybody to have to step in, you know, and try to learn our procedures, because we changed procedures several different times over
mm-hmm.
those years.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, when I had to break anybody in, which I had girls underneath me, see, when we started out, we were not union. And I'm not
sure.
The secretaries. No. The office was not union at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But when the union came in, and I can't tell you what year that was that the union came in, we were all put into the union.
Which union? Was it the UAW?
No.
Okay.
It was UAW, but
wasn't the same head thing that the people down in the shop had?
No.
It was a separate
office. It was a separate office.
Just
for office workers alone.
Office and professional workers?
Yes. Uh-huh. But now the secretary, the grade of secretary that I was in at that time, I was under the union.
So you weren't considered administration?
I wasn't. I wasn't administration, because there were other secretaries that were higher and worked for higher bosses,
mm-hmm.
one thing or another, that were not union.
Mm.
Right there. So some of us us and some of us weren't.
Right.
Depending upon, I might say more or less, who you worked for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it better to be working? The union protected your rights more?
The union protected our rights, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they took...
Yes, and then we were graded. 1, 2, 3, and 4. 4 was the highest grade that
mm-hmm.
we could go. And usually a grade 4 had people underneath them. Like I had 1, 2, 3, 4 girls underneath me
mm-hmm.
that I supervised, or not exactly supervised, but did their assigned work to them,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm.
So it was
the
different.
The union never went on strike?
No.
There wasn't strike.
No. Not at the time that I was there. They did at one time, yes.
Oh.
But not, yes. But at one time they, I think they went on strike, but that wasn't during my time.
Maybe when they were just getting in.
It might have been late 40s. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure just when, but I'm sure if it didn't go out on strike, they came very, very close to it.
Okay. When they were probably negotiating a contract.
But
there was never any question in your mind that the union was a good place.
No. The union was good. The union was good to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that partly was due to our manager at the time, too. He was our manager. Well, we had several different managers. Oh. We had such a change of personnel. Of course, we were bought and sold so many different times, and every time we were bought and sold, this was towards the last 10 years, I would say. Our last 10 years, we were bought and sold so many different times that we couldn't keep up with the letterhead
on
our stationery, and we half the time we didn't know who our bosses were or if they were...
So the union was the source of continuity almost, because at least that stayed the same.
Yes, at least that stayed the same.
Right,
yes.
And you had some security.
Yes.
It must have been very difficult to keep trying to work for a new person, learn a new routine.
Oh, it was.
Keep all in turmoil.
Yes. It was quite, because a lot of times, I can remember a couple of times working for typing up a letter for one boss and sending it out, and at the same time the next day typing up another letter, almost contradicting what I said in the first letter. So you never knew. You just did what you was told at the time, because you didn't know. As I say, we changed companies so fast and furious there for a while.
Through the 60s.
Yes.
Yeah. Now you said your husband worked there too.
My husband was a welder out in the factory. Really? Yes.
Did you meet him because you were named at Rio, or?
No. I met him through some friends, and he was working on a different job, and he got laid off from that job. And he was going to draw unemployment, and I couldn't see that. You're not going to lay around the house while I get up and work, go to work every morning. You're going to work. So I called the personnel manager at that time there, and I said, my husband's home. He's not working. I don't feel like getting up and going and coming to work in the morning, and him staying home doing nothing. He said, send him in. I called him up and I said, you meet, and I can't remember that personnel manager's name. There was another change. We were constantly changing over there. I can't remember what that man's name was.
So when was this, in the 50s sometime, when he lost his job as a welder?
He worked there 17 years. Yeah.
So he started before the war at Rio?
Well,
I'm just trying to get it, you know.
He take 17 from 75 and whatever.
He was there at the very end.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he was there at the very
so
end.
So he started.
We all, most of us walked out. Most of us were let out on April the 5th, 1975.
I see.
Very few of them were left.
Mm-hmm. Now, was he a welder at Rio before?
He was a welder at Rio.
And then you called him and got him another job at Rio?
No.
Oh, I see.
No, he was working for, what was he working at the time? Well, he was... did maintenance work on buildings.
Oh, okay.
Construction.
Uh-huh.
Like that.
Oh, and then when he got laid off from that,
yeah, it would have been just temporarily. But,
mm-hmm.
but you got
him the job at Rio as a welder.
Yes, I got him the job at Rio when the personnel manager said, well, send him in, you know. We'll find a job for it, you know.
Isn't that amazing?
And, they were always good. I mean, if you worked there, and you had somebody that you wanted to get in there, usually they would find them a job.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you were a good employee. Then
They figured if you were a good employee, and, you know, I mean, they had access to your records, that you weren't going to ask for help from somebody else, you know, unless they would be a good worker, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if they weren't a good worker, there was always ways of getting rid of them. But I don't know, I can't ever remember of anybody ever recommending somebody in the family, you know, that didn't turn out.
Yeah. Did your husband stay a welder for the 17
years?
Yes,
he stayed a welder for 17 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think his boss for 17 years, too, was Jack Harris, or what was Barrett's name? Jack Barrett. He worked for both of those fellows.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Barrett went to Pennsylvania. And they sold out another company out in Pennsylvania and started building Rio trucks out there.
Oh, in Harrisburg.
Yes,
yeah,
in Harrisburg.
Yeah, we talked to Jack Downs about that.
Oh, did you? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Jack Barrett left Rio and took a job with out in Pennsylvania.
Oh.
But I'm pretty sure Jack Harris has passed away.
Oh.
I'm not sure, but I'm almost positive he has.
Mm-hmm.
But he stayed right there. He never went back to construction. He just stayed right there.
Mm-hmm.
He liked, you know, welding and all.
It was a good job.
And it was a good job. It was year-round, steady job. And there again, see, we were both working at the same place. Basically, we had the same hours, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rio didn't put in too much overtime. Unless if it was, it was Saturdays. We put in a lot of Saturdays.
Mm.
But it was never any long 10, 12 hours. Now, I worked at Oldsmobile.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I left Rio, after I left Rio.
Oh, at 75?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I left 76 or 77. I went to Oldsmobile.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do
I worked in the office. Well, I started in the factory, and I had several jobs at Oldsmobile. Well, that was another thing. Before I went to Oldsmobile, though, I went to the credit office out in Sears. I didn't like that at all. And then I went to working for the prosecuting attorney downtown, which was Mr. Skideller.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
Yes. That was an interesting
job.
That was
interesting.
That was a very interesting.
Yeah.
That was an interesting job. And I liked it, but the pay for the working for the county, the pay was very low at that time. Since right after I left from there, they got a big raise.
Oh.
But I had already had my application in at Oldsmobile because my husband wasn't able to find a job that was paying anything at all. At that time, things were very bad.
Yeah, the mid-70s
were hard. And we didn't know, and at my age, people weren't hiring people. You know, and if you were in your 30s, 40s at that time, people just were not hiring you. They didn't want only high school kids. And they really didn't. I never thought for one minute that with my years of experience as a secretary, that I would have any trouble whatsoever of finding a job.
Yeah.
I think so.
But I was too old. And they didn't want, they could take a girl out of high school or out of first out of college and train them their way, their way of doing things, rather than try to take somebody older and try to teach them new ways. Other, of course, it was the insurance, too. I can see the company's idea. They had to pay bigger, higher insurance and on paying on me than what they would have just a young girl.
Yeah.
So if they had a choice between a girl that was 20 years old and one was 45, you know who they're going to take.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my application in at Oldsmobile, and my brother worked at Oldsmobile. So with his help and calling in the personnel manager, they called me. In fact, I turned down a job at Oldsmobile three times before I finally went over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was working at the personnel or the attorney for the prosecuting attorney, and that was a good group of people that I worked for down there. Those
mm-hmm.
attorneys I worked for down there was a good group, and I enjoyed them, and I enjoyed the girls and all. But the pay wasn't that good, and Oldsmobile had told me that they could get me into a project. Oldsmobile has several projects at that time of year. They have several projects going on
mm-hmm.
all of the time. And they told me, well, if I'd come in there, they would get me in on one of those projects. So here I was working in the prosecuting attorney's office, and my boss at that time was in the Upper Peninsula, and Oldsmobile calls me, and they say, you've got to come to work here the next day.
Oh, dear.
Or we're going to pull your application,
yeah.
and you won't, they said, because this is the third time since you've told us no. And I said, oh my God, my boss is in the Upper Peninsula on a case. I've got a stack load of cases this high on my desk. What am I going to do? And she says, well, I don't know. Because I had always thought that I could have at least 10 days, you know, to give my supervisor notice. So I said, oh my God. So I told him, oh, I'll be there. But then I sat there at my desk and I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I went out to at our office, talked to one of the other girls, and I said, well, what would you do? I mean, here I am with all these cases stacked up on my desk of all these people that I've called that are coming into court the next day, you know, and all these letters and everything like that, and my boss is in the Upper Peninsula, and no way to get a hold of him. And Susie just said, quit. Just write him a notice. She says, and be gone. She says, they'll reschedule the cases. And I said, all these people I've called and they're coming into court tomorrow. I'm not going to be there. So what? It happens all the time. So
that's
what I did. And I went to Oldsmobile the next day and took a physical, and they put me in what they call the 150 building, which was driving cars off from the line after they were built and ready to get to be shipped.
Oh.
But they have what they call a history card. And that history card, you learn how to read it. And it tells you where this car is to be taken, whether it's ready to be shipped or whether it has it's not completed, it has maybe it has to be repainted, maybe it's missing some parts, or different reasons. And then you have different locations that you'd have to take that car and park it in, like that.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting there. But
that's not an office job.
No, it wasn't an office job, but it was different. It was different than an office job.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of enjoyed getting away from the office work for a change.
Up under the stress for just
a while. For a while, yeah. And this was different. And, of course, I had never been in the factory before, even though I worked at Real for 20 years, 25 years.
Mm-hmm. You were going down.
I had never been but through the factory about three times, and that was to walk from our office on Washington Avenue to over to Baker Street for some reason that I had to go over there. And I usually had one plant protection or somebody take me through the factory. So my experience of being in a factory was just to follow the guard through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was really an experience to go through the factory or work in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a whole different world. It certainly is. And it was very stressful. It was very stressful. I at that time, well, of course, it was kind of fun right at the first, you know, and meeting a bunch of different people and learning all this. But then it got boring. Well, your mind wasn't working. I mean, all you was doing was getting in a car, driving it out to the lot, back, driving another car. You stand in line because there was other people that had the same job.
I see.
And it was just repetitious, the same thing, all of the time, taking the car out and come back. And it was usually 12 hours a day, 10 to 12 hours a day. They were really working at that time.
Yeah.
And
You said you made more pay.
Oh, yes. Well, the pay was...
That's what made the difference.
Yeah, that's what made... That's was the thing that got me left the county, because the county was paying low at the time, and the difference... And the benefits.
Yes.
The benefits that Oldsmobile was... And the much better insurance, much better pension plan, and the wages were so much different there.
Mm-hmm.
And and because my husband wasn't working, and because of my age, and I didn't know whether he was going to get a job or what he was going to do, you know, at that time.
You had to make these moves.
Yeah, and it was very scary at the time because nobody was getting a job, and the only way you got a job was if you had any pull.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it was nice. It was, but I stayed there for 15 years.
Doing that job?
No, oh no, no.
When did you go from that job to the next one?
Oh God, I worked the line for a while because of cutbacks and different things.
On the assembly line?
I went to, well, working in 150, what they call 150 building, it's kind of a, it's set aside. It's a building that is set aside. It's kind of the end of the line building.
It's more like the final product.
The final product, yeah. Before they really ship the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really factory. I mean, it was a completely different. All the cars, you don't see anything of the assembling of the cars. When the cars come up there, they're all finished. You know, they had to be painted. A lot of times they were missing maybe an air cleaner, or maybe the brakes weren't quite right, or it was kind of a repair place. Although they have a repair down on the line and all, but it was kind of finishing touches. A lot of it was interior.
I see.
Yeah, but mostly it was just sending the car out, waiting for new parts, or maybe a license bracket or something or other, you know, had to be put on there. For some reason, or they probably ran out of them down in the shop, and they couldn't ship the car without it. Or a lot of times they put parts on, like whenever we sent a car to Canada, we had to take off the rear view mirror on the outside. This was due to export. This was due to export.
So it wouldn't get knocked off in the shipment? Or?
No, it was something about if the car, when they ship it to Canada, if it's missing like the rear view mirror on the outside, see, that car wasn't complete. So they didn't have to pay as much money if it was an incomplete car as they were if if it wasn't assembled yet.
And
they would complete it. The mirror would be put in the back seat, and they'd finish it in Canada.
Oh,
that's interesting.
It's politics.
That's right.
It's politics.
And it keeps the people up there working, too.
It keeps them, well, although we have a big factory in Canada, too.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things.
And where did you go after that?
I went to, they had several cutbacks, and then I went down on the line for a while.
Mm.
But that was terrible. Yeah. And from there, I went into the office.
You did? You finally got back into
Yes,
the office.
I went back into the, I went to the office down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed in the office for, quite a while. I'm not sure exactly how long, but I stayed in the office. Well, then they wanted somebody. They started a new program where we have, Fisher Body is over on the west side of town and Oldsmobile here. Well, the cars are starting to be built over in Fisher Body. And then they're shipped over here, not complete.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to finish them up over in Oldsmobile. Well, they had a lot of things that were wrong. So Oldsmobile said Fisher Body people weren't doing their job. Oldsmobile people said Fisher Body were not doing their job. We were not completing their job. Or they were sending their wirings wrong. When they got over here, it caused problems over here. There was tension back and forth, and this had been going on for a number of years. They wanted somebody to act as a liaison between the two companies.
There.
So I was picked to try to be a mediator between the two and try to solve problems that they would have or find out why this problem. One was a sealer problem, which you'd have to work there to know what it is. But they have a lot of, you'd have to know. You'd have to see the cars that they're being built in the Fisher Body. But a lot of parts were come together. The metal parts on cars on the frame where they come together in the seams. They have what they call a sealer. And it's done by a gun, a big long rod. They call it a sealer gun, but it's really a big long rod.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a sealer. It's like a glue. A caulking gun or so. They caulk these different parts and one thing. But a lot of times the sealer would get into and cover up other holes. Which when they got over here in the Oldsmobile and people would go to put their part in that hole, they couldn't go in there because of this sealer problem. Well, this was a big problem because it happened many, many times.
Mm.
And so that car would go down the line because the line was moving, the guy couldn't do his job, and it was due to the fact that over in Fisher Body, somebody was sealing up those holes, either intentionally or not intentionally, doing their job but not knowing what they were doing, not knowing that they were causing a problem over here.
So then you would be called and you would go over to Fisher?
I would have to go to Fisher Body and try to ask the people, please don't seal these holes. Why are you sealing these holes? And try to explain to them why they shouldn't and why they should be careful. And at the same time, come back here and make peace with these people and try to tell them why they're doing that. And it was many problems were all over. Sometimes the fixtures, sometimes the fixtures didn't work right, and it was a problem solving job.
Troubleshooting.
Yeah,
they called it like that position.
Sounds like
yes and no. It was stressful. Because you were working, you had to be very careful. I was from Oldsmobile. I couldn't go over on the line because we have two different unions.
Oh, my.
I couldn't go over there and walk up to that person on the line over there at Fisher Body and say, you're doing the job wrong.
They aren't gonna
take it from me.
Yeah, really.
And yet, at the same time, I had to go through their supervisor, which sometimes the supervisor could care less.
Mm.
He was making production, and he could care less. And sometimes he went out, and sometimes he didn't go out.
Mm.
Whether he did or not, and it was very stressful sometimes. And at the same time, I had to watch myself at Oldsmobile, because some of the people at Oldsmobile said, well, hell, I've been here for 25 years and you've just been here for 10 years or 5 years, so who do you think you are trying to tell me how to do my job?
Oh, dear.
And at the same time, you had to watch yourself coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of jealousy between the Oldsmobile and Fisher Body.
Yeah.
A lot of jealousy to the extent of the supervisors out there. And it was...
Mm. That's an interesting one.
It was... I met a lot of people, and I didn't have any trouble with anybody. I didn't have any trouble with anybody, with the supervisors or the people themselves. I used to go through there, and when I'd walk from, the length of... You ever drive past Fisher Body?
Yes.
Sometimes. just thinking, I walked both sides, all through every department in Fisher Body and every department in Oldsmobile.
My goodness, you've
I have walked
exercise.
Miles and miles and miles.
They should have paid her by the mile.
And I'd been a millionaire today. I put in many miles over there, and I'd walk down those lines, and they'd holler out, "Hi, Doris, hi, Doris."
Oh.
Hi,
so you were doing a good job.
Yes, and many, and when I left there, retired from Oldsmobile, Fisher Body gave me a retirement party, too.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's wonderful.
Which they've not done with anybody else. They've never done it for anybody else. And even to the supervisors up in the office, the high ones. When I had a retirement party at Oldsmobile, and there was over 800 people there. They've never had as many people at a retirement party.
Wow.
It's what I had at my retirement party. And people came from all the way from Fisher Body over to my retirement party, even after they had gave me one at Fisher Body.
Well, for goodness sake. Isn't it a wonderful thing for you to think about?
Yes, and I have films about all of
them. Oh,
they recorded it on a film.
That's
a video, yes.
Now, if everybody left Rio at the end, there were no parties. There was nothing.
No, very terrible. It was really terrible.
Let's go back to a happier time when you were working in the office at Rio.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about the Girls Club.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, actually, to get us back to Rio, what you thought were the big differences between... I mean, obviously, you worked in Olds in the 70s
mm-hmm.
and 80s, so it was a different time, you know? I mean, the economy was different.
Yeah.
The nature of the cars was different.
Yeah.
But was there anything about the atmosphere between Olds and...
It was cold.
It wasn't as warm or friendly.
No, it was cold. I met a lot of good people at Oldsmobile. I have no qualms about Oldsmobile.
Well, it was
a bigger
place, too.
But it was a bigger place. But the people were different. The people are different.
At Oldsmobile, between Rio.
Yes.
Yeah.
The people at Rio, maybe it was the people that I knew, maybe it was because it was my first job, you might say, one of the first jobs.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because my mother worked there but I can't really say that, because everybody that has ever worked at Rio, they all say the same thing, that it was a warm place, it was a family place.
Right.
And I didn't hear that at Oldsmobile. They didn't care. One thing
about you as a person,
no.
Or about the job they were doing, maybe.
Well. Yeah, they cared about the job they were doing, but they didn't care about you as a person. One thing particularly that I really noticed at Rio, if somebody didn't show up for work, we were concerned about them, whether they were ill, whether it was a family problem, or what.
Yeah.
I mean, we really were concerned. We did what we could to make it easier for that person. At Oldsmobile, if somebody doesn't show up for work, so what? They don't even care. They don't even ask.
Mm.
Well, what was the matter?
Mm.
It's just that somebody else steps in and does their job, and that's it.
Mm.
So she didn't talk. I couldn't find. Different people wouldn't come to work, you know. I said, "Well, what is the matter? Is she sick?" Oh, which is true. I think with Oldsmobile, you'll find a lot of people that just take a day off. just because they have other things to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or just tired.
Just don't want to go in.
Where it was usually because they were sick or we knew why they weren't there.
Yeah.
It was a much warmer place. It was just a different feeling completely.
Mm-hmm.
Out there.
Mm-hmm. And it was more because of the workers and their relationship with each other rather than what the management did, you think?
We were closer. Where management and the management and the people were very
closer
close.
At Rio.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were very close.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that was? Were they more like they were the same kind of people, or any specific policies or things that they did that made them closer?
It was just the people. It was
people?
Just the people. John Tucker was one of our. He was one of the. He was the president of Rio when I went to work there.
Yeah.
Wonderful person.
Yeah.
Everybody, right down. But John Tucker, which was a tall giant of a man, he was a wonderful person. He spoke to the janitors, the people that was down on their hands and knees scrubbing the floor. He spoke to everybody.
Yeah. So
nobody was beneath Mr. Tucker.
Yeah. Well, it started way back with Oles.
It started, you know? Yes. Yeah.
It comes from the top down, doesn't
mm-hmm,
it?
Yes. He would stop and talk to you in the hallway. Didn't make any difference what you did or anything like that there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he thought you were doing your job or not. He stopped and talked to you. Like I say, but Oldsmobile, you wouldn't see top management stopping and talking to the janitors or one of the sweepers. Or something.
Yeah.
That would be way beneath them. They definitely would never do that.
Almost a caste system. Over
well,
there.
Definitely. But and we had this with most of our. There was a few supervisors at Rio in later years that wouldn't do it.
You got stuffy.
Very stuffy. But then there was others that were real good.
Yeah.
There. Mm. I think a lot of it had to do with the stress too that they were under.
Yeah, because things were.
But a lot of people would, as I say, John Tucker was, and I think. Well, I know when I first went to work there, Mr. Shearer was there. Mr. Shearer was. Well, it was real nice too.
Mm-hmm. He was the president.
He was the president, but I didn't get to know him like I did John Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they were real nice. Yeah.
So that was the difference you thought.
The difference, yes.
Yeah. How about the other stuff like the clubs you were talking about before and the kind of activities that went that were was organized?
Well, we had the real girls club.
Uh-huh.
That there, as I say, that was made up of the girls in the office.
The office girls.
That was the office
girls. Was it something for the girls and who worked in the factories too?
At that time, no.
No. Okay.
No. The girls in the factory were later invited into the girls.
Oh.
But they very very few of them ever came in to the girls.
I think that's true for what I know.
Yeah. Most of them they always said, well, the girls in the office are too good for us. They were out there, their jobs were dirtier.
Yeah.
And they didn't feel right in coming in, sitting at the table with a girl that was sitting next to her with polished shoes and nails and so on and so forth when they were out in the factory.
Yeah,
covered with oil.
Or whatever, you know. They just didn't feel right. But
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of the girls that we enjoyed and we always invited them in, but they not too many of them ever came in.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said, well, we were always too good for, which wasn't true, but I can see where they would feel that way.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think is so interesting about your life, your work history, is that you went back and forth. And
oh, yes.
From what I've been reading, that's pretty unusual.
Yeah,
you know, if you're an office girl, that's pretty much, if you're in the factory, it's very hard to make that
transition. That transition to work into the office was very mind-boggling, I'll tell you. It was, I never thought that, I think that the only thing I stayed at Oldsmobile was I ran into a girl when I first went to work at Oldsmobile. When I went into this building 150, I ran into a girl that I had not seen for a number of years. I was in an automobile accident several years before when I was young. I was only about 18 years old. I was in an automobile accident. And six of my friends were killed.
Oh,
yes. And this girl that I ran into at Oldsmobile, she was one of our clique, but she wasn't with us that night. Well, I was in the hospital for 6 months unconscious.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
what a wonder you survived, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Were you the only survivor from
that? I was the only... No, the fellow that I was with got out of it with just a bump on his head. The other five were killed. Yeah, the other four were killed. But anyhow, I ran into this girl at Oldsmobile. She was working in this, doing the same thing that I ended up driving cars up. And she was kind of a loner. So I got reacquainted with her there. She had had years of, in there at Oldsmobile, so she was knew where.
Yeah, right.
I probably couldn't have made it without her because it was so different. I couldn't. You had nothing to use your mind for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh God, what am I doing? These people are just zombies walking around doing the same thing day after day after day. It's the same thing down when I was working on the line. I went down on the line. It was the same thing, putting this nuts and bolts on. And screwing it down and then waiting for the next car and doing the same thing for 8 hours a day. And God, my mind's not working.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can do this. You know. But back to the girls club there. Yes, we had a real good girls club and we had quite a big membership of us. And I have several scrapbooks of different parties. And shows. Oh, we used to put on. Oh, we put on showers. We put on style shows.
Uh huh.
We had Christmas parties. We put on several charity, different things.
Mhm. A charity that would reach outside the factory.
Oh
community?
Yes, outside the factory. The rummage sales, that we would put on to make money, money making projects. A lot of cake and cookies, were sold, to outside. As well as inside the factory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did the company encourage
the activities? Oh, the company was always behind us.
Yeah.
We had a club room. We had a room
in the
clubhouse, which unfortunately is gone, which really broke us up.
Yes.
I think that hurt. When they took the clubhouse away, I think that hurt us as bad as losing our job.
Losing your childhood.
It really was. It really was hard to take. And for a long time afterwards, none of us could drive down Washington. In fact, I think most of us evade going down that street to
Washington
the state.
Or Baker.
Yes. I think I can go down there now, but I never go down there before I think we can. That's where my office used to be, right up there. That's what the clubhouse was. And the good times that we had, the charity balls that we had there.
Mm.
And the decorating. We used to, our bosses used to let us out to go over to decorate for the different charities. And we used to have several hundred people would come to our charity balls.
What kinds of things did you do charities for?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. They were fundraisers.
For the Marion Ilick Cancer Fund.
Uh-huh.
Back there.
For cancer research.
We bought several different pieces of equipment.
For the hospital.
For the Sparrow Hospital, yes. One in particular that I remember was a big wheel bed. Oh, this was several years ago. It cost several $1,000s. It was for people that were either burned or couldn't turn themselves.
Oh, like a striker frame?
Like a striker frame. It was very new at that time.
I see.
But they would put these people on there, and every, so often it would
turn sores
and things like that. And we bought the bed, and then after we bought the bed, there was different components that you could buy for it
to add on
to it. Yes.
Did you do things for the Y or other types of local organizations or churches or blood drives?
Yes, we had blood drives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember some of the things.
Hilda Smith was in the picture of her album. There was a picture of baskets of food and
for Christmas. Yes,
and those she said were for the real families.
The needy real families. Yes, I don't. No, I don't. Probably don't have any of those pictures. I have some of those pictures at home,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure Hilda has some.
Yeah, because we didn't know about that before we saw
the
pictures. Yeah.
No, we didn't know that the club reached out beyond even their Oldham group. This is all
new to me. Yes.
To do community type work.
For the community, yes. We took care of the real people themselves first, but anything left over was through the clearinghouse. It was always cleared through the clearinghouse. Now, a couple of the girls will, I hope, I don't know if she'll be there tomorrow. No, she probably, or next, I'll have to call her and see if she can make it.
Who's that?
Ardeth Papin.
Oh, yeah, we've met Ardeth.
Have you met Ardeth?
Sure. I'm really anxious to talk to her.
Yeah, we usually call her.
Now, Ardeth was one of the ones that worked on this fundraising for Christmas.
Okay.
I don't know whether she has any pictures. I've got a few pictures of that there.
Okay.
That was kind of, well, that was made up of several different people. The union and
was
yes.
Did you go to the clubhouse as a child too? Because your mom worked there.
No, I worked in I lived in Traverse City as a child.
Oh.
I never came down here until 42.
Oh, during the war.
During the war.
Did she go to work in the factory during the war?
My mother never did go to work in the factory. She always worked in the office.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
My mother worked. Okay. Yeah. I don't know what year she went to work there. But I came down here in 42.
Okay, now you said you were born in Lansing, but yet
No, I was born in Traverse City.
Traverse City, oh,
yes,
okay.
I was born in Traverse City, and I went to school in Traverse City.
Oh, okay.
And then you came down here and went to Acme Business
Went
College.
To Acme Business School down here, yeah.
Okay, so you came here for business college?
Yes.
And your mom came with you?
My mother came with me and two brothers, yes.
Oh, and you all settled in Lansing,
and
settled
in
Lansing.
Went to work at Real. And she went to work at Real, and my brothers went to school.
I see.
Oh.
Did she do clerical work up in Traverse City, too?
No.
She did?
No, that was, she did that before she was married. My mother's from Chicago.
Oh.
And so, she had schooling, you know, she,
in Chicago.
In Chicago.
While she was married, she was a homemaker.
Yes.
I wish I had met your mother, because my first book was about clerical workers in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my mother's passed away.
Yeah. That's exactly the kind of person I wrote my book about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And
so you had two brothers, and you said one of them was at Olds, but at some point one was at Rio, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't, so the clubhouse was really something that you knew from as a, knew about as an
adult
working
adult,
person?
As an adult person working at Rio, yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And besides the girls' club activities, were there other things that you did through the clubhouse? I mean, did you go to the movies there? Or
no, that was all gone by the time was there in the 40s, but I didn't have anything to do with it.
Oh, okay.
Right there. I worked for other companies before I went to work. As I said, I worked for J.C. Penney Company for one thing. Well, I worked for the state when I was in that accident. Back in the 40s, I was working for the state back there.
Uh-huh.
And then after I was in the accident there, that laid me up for a while. And I didn't go back to the state. I went back to the state, but I didn't stay at the state. Things had changed at the state. It was back during the war, and things had changed at the state. So I left there and went to work for J.C. Penney Company.
What did you do at J.C. Penney?
I worked in the office. Yeah.
Ace being one of my favorite stores.
Oh, did you? That was when it was downtown, way down there.
Yeah. Well, it was right on the corner of Michigan and
Washington.
Washington,
that's when I worked
there. In the early times, yes.
Yeah. I worked there for a while there. But then I eventually ended up going to Flint. I had some friends over in Flint. And I was moving all over at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you were single? And
I was single and traveling around, you know, traveled on and then I was job here, job there, and everything like that. Didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met this fellow, and I thought about marrying him one time. Then I got this, as I said, they sent me to school up in New York.
Oh, for the dressmaking.
For the dress, managing their way of
doing
things, business and all, and one thing. But before that, I worked in the store over there in Flint for quite a while. And then they asked me if I'd like that, you know, take over a manager. Because the woman that was there, her husband was ill, and she was contemplating on leaving because he'd had heart trouble and one thing or another. and she was thinking about leaving the store and retiring. So they asked me if I wanted, so that's how I went to New York. Mm-hmm. Got all that schooling.
Where'd you go in New York? I'm just curious. I'm from New York too.
New York City.
You lived in Manhattan?
Yeah, Manhattan, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
That must have been very exciting.
It was. It was fun because I had an expense account.
They paid everything. Wow.
I paid nothing. They furnished. I had.
It's like hitting the lottery.
Right. Oh, I was flown in there. A car waited for me there. Was waiting right there at the airport there. Whenever, and they took me, and I can't tell you the name of that hotel. I wish I had those old papers, but
I bet they took you to the Barbizon. That was for young women.
So
that's right. No, it wasn't the Barbizon.
No, it wasn't the Barbizon. God, I can't remember the name of that. Oh, it was a real fancy, fancy place. Oh,
yeah. They didn't take you to something in a side street.
I had the very best. The room, the suite that I had was one huge suite with a bed and everything, and then off on the side was a little kitchen, you know, and a balcony out overlooking the river. You know, it was beautiful.
Goodness.
But whenever I had to go anywhere or anything like that, all I had to do was call, and there was a car waiting for me and a chauffeur. And I was taken to the school and back, and of course all my expenses were paid. Whatever I wanted to eat or anything like that,
they were all
taken care of. I spent not one cent of my own money or anything like that. I went over to Buffalo a couple of different times. That was all paid for.
Mm-hmm. Were they annoyed with you when you decided to leave and not take it?
They weren't very happy.
Yeah, I bet not.
No.
After counting on you and spending their money on you and training you.
They weren't happy. But they were nice. I just explained to them my brothers was in the service, my mother was all alone.
Yeah.
And in fact, they gave me a nice letter of recommendation and told me if things didn't work out,
that I could
come back.
Oh, that's lovely.
That was real nice.
I still
have that letter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yes, they were upset because they had spent a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
but they still were. I was still offered to come back.
Beyond the money, they had a worthwhile person here that was going to be such a good employee that they hated to lose.
Yes.
I can see, of course,
I was young enough to see at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is always something that companies look for, is somebody young enough so that they can start you in down here,
and
then you're going to be there,
and
you can work your way up.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been
a working person your whole life.
My whole life. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the times during the 50s and the 60s, at least from kind of some of the things that I read, a lot of the sentiment in this country or in the world was that, you know, women should stay home.
Oh yeah.
And not be out in the workplace. Did you ever encounter anything like that? That maybe.
Never.
Especially in hard times.
Never.
That. This should be a man doing this
because
he's got to take care of a family or anything like that.
I never encountered any of that there. I never encountered any of the girls that felt like that. Either.
Really?
No.
I never had
that problem. I've read and I've heard an awful lot about
it. Right, especially in the 50s.
Yeah, especially in the 50s. But no, I never encountered anything like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It might be too the type of jobs, because people expected you to be either be a secretary or a nurse
I was always in the office, you know,
and that made it okay.
And that was a woman's job.
Right.
I was single.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, maybe if had I have been married, they would have said, "Well, you should be home taking care of your family," you know. But I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was single and I was.
Was it hard to do both? I'm very interested in this since I'm trying to do it myself. You know, be a working person and have a family too.
I don't think so.
Oh, I'm tired all the time.
I've been this route. I know what it's like.
I look back on it now, and a lot of things that I did then, I wonder, how did I do it?
Had you managed?
Yes.
Yes.
I think the same thing. How did I do that?
That's right. That's right. I think, oh my God, when I see some of these people with a couple of kids, two or three kids, and they're getting up, and they got to get them off to school. But then I think back, well, I did that.
Sure.
And that hurt me. And I didn't think anything of it at the time.
Uh-huh.
No, you just do it because that's what you have to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How many children do you have?
I don't have any. I had a niece that I raised.
Oh, I see.
But I don't have any children. But I took my niece when she was just 2 years old.
Oh, Oh,
so that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
When the responsibility and the love and the care.
Did
you have your mom help you, though?
No. My mother always said, I raised you kids.
That's enough.
That's it. Okay. My mother very seldom ever babysat for us. Mm-hmm. We took Tim with us whenever we went anywhere or anything like that. We didn't have nursery schools and things like that like they have now. When I was working, I dropped her off at a babysitter.
Oh, you had a sitter.
Yeah, for when I was working and she was going to school and all.
Yeah.
And I look back and I can't think, God, did I do that? In fact, I lived over on the north side of town, I remember, and I had a girlfriend, and I didn't have a car at that time. I had a girlfriend that lived over on the south side of town, and she had three little kids, stepped one right after another. And I can remember more than one time of coming over on the bus, because I didn't have a car, and I would go get her children. I lived on the north side, and she lived on the south side of town. I would go get her children and take them over to my house, which I lived in a two-room small, to give her relief. And her kids were all in diapers at that time.
That was very nice of you.
I'd take them on the bus. I would take them on the bus. And the little boy, and their boy, would wet his pants the minute we go to get on the bus. Michael would be soaking wet. I had to go all across town with these three little children like that.
I bet she blesses you now for having done that for her.
She's dead.
She's gone now. And in fact, I just went to the funeral. They're all in their older now, I guess they're 30.
I wonder if he still has that problem when he gets out of bus.
He's a contractor now. I don't know.
Oh, I bet he's
I can remember. Yes, he would be embarrassed. He would be embarrassed now. But I used to tell him when he was smaller, when he was 15, 16 years old, Michael, I can remember more than one time, you know. But I used to do that. But now I think, oh my God!
Yeah.
Can you imagine anybody doing that and taking her across town? Three little kids. But I see people doing it. I see young girls doing it.
Yeah.
You know.
It's just not easy. It never was.
I don't think it'd let her change. You just do it because that's what you have to do at the time. But I think now the kids have it so much easier nowadays than what we did then.
Well, there's more, like you said, there are more schools and things.
There's more schools and things. We didn't have the nursery schools and all that they have now.
Of course, they had their own set of worries, too.
Oh, well, it's different now than what it was there.
But the basic thing is still there.
It's still there.
The mother with the responsibilities and never enough time and always time.
Yeah, that's
right. And you still had a home to take care of.
You still had a home to take care of and a husband to.
It's like wearing three different hats or three different wives. I'd like to talk just a bit about the end at Rio.
Oh, okay.
Very bad. Well, we had, as I say, I suppose we should have seen it coming.
Really? Why do you think that?
Well, I'm not alone. I've heard other girls talk about that. We always figured, I always figured, that we were changing, buying and selling. Different companies were buying and selling us. We were always changing letterhead there. But we always figured, or I did anyhow, that if things were ever going to go bad or close down,
mm-hmm.
that, well, we'd see the big supervisors leaving. I always said, well, if I see so-and-so leaving and other vice presidents and presidents leaving, I'll know that there was something in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would see it through the correspondence. You know, you'd see through correspondence or get something,
clue. Well, you typed up the letter, so you get an inside.
Yeah, you would, but I always thought, well, if I see, And you have certain people that you kind of look to in the vice president or something. If he starts leaving, you know, if you see a run of them, start, you know, you think, well, they're going to look out for themselves, even if they don't tell you.
That's
and
right.
They're sitting in on meetings that you don't have anything knowledge of or anything like that, because they used to always have their meeting. Well, if anything starts happening, I see them, well, then I'll get out too, because I'll know that there's something in the wind. None of them ever left, because none of them ever knew.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, no. No, that's we good. Never knew. See, we never knew that what he was doing, although we... Mr. Capron. We knew that he wasn't paying his bills.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yes. Some of us did. Some of them didn't. But some of us knew that he wasn't paying his bills, and that the, and depending upon who you knew and what department that you were associated with, or what, if you knew the people in the cashier's office, or, you know, that you were friends with them, well, they might mention, well, he was in last night and emptied the till, or this morning we didn't have any money to. Or if you knew one of his secretaries, and she'd say, well, the Board of Water and Light was in today, but he was right here, but we were told to tell him that he was gone, he was in Virginia, or he was in Mississippi, or something like that, you know. And
supplier bills
would be coming in, and they'd say, well, he'll take care of it when he gets back, you know.
No way to run a business.
No, but at the same time,
like,
well, at the same time, see, we were understood that he was a millionaire.
I read that he was.
Oh, yes. He had millions of dollars. So we were just under the assumption that, A, he was going to pay it. And at the time, we did not know that he was what he was doing with all of this money.
Hmm.
We didn't know what.
What do you think he was doing with it?
Well, he was taking it and taking the money out of our company and investing it in his other companies.
Yeah.
He had several different companies.
I knew he had the mobile home.
He had the mobile company. He had farm machinery. He had farming country out in Wyoming and out through there. And then he owned a lot of real estate. He was into real estate.
Mm-hmm.
He was taking the money here and paying off bills other places.
Cool.
See. No, none of us knew it until we came to work on April the 5th, and the doors were locked.
Oh, my
God. Oh, yes.
Really?
We never knew it. We never knew it.
Oh.
We never knew it until we came to work, and I never will forget. I only lived about three blocks from Rio at that time, and I'm walking down the street, and all of these people are standing out in front of the administration building. I'm wondering, why are all these people standing out in the engineering building straight down the hallway in here, or down the street? And I'm saying, why aren't those people going in?
Oh,
or, you know, why are they all...
You must have had this horrible feeling in the pit of your stomach.
No.
Maybe you wonder if there was a fire inside.
Well,
or some reason.
No, as I'm walking down the street, I'm walking towards my job.
Mm-hmm.
From the I live close enough, so I go out to work. But I'm walking down the street there down Washington Avenue. And why is this crowd of people out there in front? Why aren't they going in? Well, it was April. It was the spring of the year, so you're thinking, well, it's nice out. It was quite common to see people stand out in front with a cup of coffee or something like that in the spring of the year. If it was a nice day, you know,
yeah.
And it was nice that day. But there was too many people. And then as you get there closer, you see the chains on the door.
Oh.
You know something has happened. And of course, you're looking at the chains on the door and you say, why, aren't I going? And there's just this big
notice.
Sign on the door there.
What did it say?
Just closed for... It didn't say,
like
it didn't
further
say
notice,
further
or, something
notice or something like that there.
Hmm.
Report tomorrow or something
then?
Else. Well, we just all stood around there and talked, and we didn't really know what was going on because there was no bankruptcy. Then it was just closed. We didn't know what to think. And so I guess we probably it's really hard to remember, but as I say, I think we just, a day off. Great. You know. Come back tomorrow. I think it was like, come back tomorrow, or something like that.
Was there anything in the paper that day?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And then, as I say, my scrapbook. I've got my scrapbook, which I was kind of looking through yesterday. Very discouraging, you know, as I went through, because I saved all of the scraps. And in fact, I still got them, you know. I still got them. I keep anything we get from the main bankruptcy court or anything like that, I stick that in there.
So you went back, say, the next day? And
probably the next day.
Whenever you went back?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Were
oh,
you
yeah.
ever brought in and told what was happening?
No. We was never... That was it. Yeah.
Mm.
We were allowed back in there later on to clean out our desk. And
well, I suppose bankruptcy officials or whatever standing about?
Supervising.
No, there wasn't anybody.
Wasn't there really?
No. In fact, that's why none of us can figure out why didn't we take a lot of stuff? Instead, we left so much stuff. People were walking out of there now, you know, with poor people that were more brazen and one thing or another. We're walking out of there with typewriters and calculators and things like that there.
Mm-hmm.
They just walked out. But in fact, our girls' club stuff, we had several pieces of our girls' club, our china and different things that we just left. We expected to come back. We only went in and cleaned out our desk, taking our purse, because they told us to come in there and clean out our desk, take our personal things, only our personal things, out of there. So we went in and we cleaned out our desk and took our personal things, but we still, all of us, left a lot of stuff that we really figured we'd be back. Yeah, we
it's
didn't
another
expect,
one of these changeovers.
Yeah, it was. We just figured because we figured it would just be wouldn't be short time at all, and then somebody would buy us, and we'd be back in business.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of stuff we left there. There was a lot of coats, shoes, different things, radios, and you know, personal things that you carry. You have in your office there that you just don't take home.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You know that.
What do you think ever happened to things like the china and the girls' club? And
oh, they all went into the trash.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Those would be collector's items now.
Oh, they definitely would, yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the whole clubhouse should have been.
Oh, the clubhouse,
yeah, yeah,
I'm saying.
I feel pretty bad about that, too, and I didn't even work there. But
I remember somebody, and I see them in antique shows now, the little green vases. They weren't the little green flower vases.
The little glass ones?
The little glass. They used to have green ones, you know. But our girls' club used to, we bought up several hundred of these little vases. And then when somebody was ill or something like that, we would get the flowers and take them
put them in and take
them to the hospital. I see those vases now, $5 or so,
in antique
places where we paid, probably gave them 50 cents for them, you know, because we bought up a bunch of them.
Sure.
We left them all there. They all went into... When the clubhouse went down, those were there. And different things that were left there. So many, many things that we should have saved. You know, pictures are on our own, frames that were on the pictures on the wall. Beautiful paintings that were on the wall were left. Some different things were put in the auction. They had a big auction sale. A lot of different things were put in the auction.
Furniture, I suppose.
Furniture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there was many, many things that of value that were gone.
We've got two or three folding chairs. I think they're back in the archives room now, that came from the clubhouse, the old wooden folding
chairs.
The
old wooden folding
chairs. Mm-hmm. And they've got a little plaque on the back to say they're from the real clubhouse.
Yeah.
And they were donated. I got a phone call one day from the Pentecost Church, I think, on the south side, and said, "We're remodeling. We've got enough money to buy new chairs. We've got two that came from the real clubhouse.
Oh,
would you like them?"
Oh, yeah.
I said, yes.
Absolutely, you know, a whole book could be written about how they got from the real clubhouse to that church.
To that church.
No, there's a story in everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a story in everything.
Yeah.
But when I think back of some of all those things that, they're just gone. It really makes you sick.
Yeah.
Different pain.
Because that clubhouse represented so much of everyone's lives. That's the thing that makes it.
It's not just the people that worked there. There was people outside of Lansing that... you know, went to the dances, the charity balls there. Well, they had several, the clubhouse, they rented the clubhouse, many different clubs.
Oh,
rented.
They used it.
Yes, used it. The Boy Scouts,
oh.
The Girl Scouts, several weddings were performed there.
Oh.
Several big weddings.
So it's like a community center.
Yes.
It would have been the civic center of its day, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if Vern Hyatt was our custodian for the clubhouse. Vern could go on.
Is he living in Lansing?
Yeah, no, he lives in Weberville.
Weberville. Let's see if we can find this man.
Yeah, really.
Vern has, I may have his address and all too, but I know Fern Placeway has his.
Okay.
I know that she does.
Great.
She has his address. We've been out. He has several pieces of, I should say pictures. I don't know what all Vern has got. God only knows what he stole took out of there.
Well,
he was custodian of the clubhouse for several years. I don't know. I would probably say 30, 40 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
He goes back.
Oh, he goes back.
We got to find him.
He's hard to talk to.
Because I'm very interested in the early years, too, from the 20s.
Yeah, he worked for several. So if you do take your recording, because Vern will go on for hours.
Great.
Yeah.
We love it.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed my time there.
I think you did.
I was sorry to see that it ended.
When you worked at Rio and then also later at Olsenfield, did you live down in Lansing?
I've always lived in Lansing.
Downtown Lansing.
Yeah.
Did you have a house? Or did you and husband rent an apartment? Or
we rented an apartment.
Okay. Downtown in Lansing?
We rented.
You moved around?
Moved around different parts of Lansing.
Okay.
Yeah. We now own our own
house.
You
have a house now?
Oh, yeah. We have rentals and we have houses because we're both retired now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did you realize any benefits from your retirement? I mean, I know he took the money out of the retirement pension funds, but were you able to?
The only thing that we got was awarded to this government, the PG.
Yes, somebody mentioned that
PG,
to us. Pension Restoration Fund or something like that. Who told?
Yeah.
Art Fram told us.
Art Fram, yeah.
Fram, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he did.
He said it's very small, though.
Very small.
Oh,
it's a tiny percentage. Yes. Like after 25 years there, all I get is $112.
A month,
yes. Yeah,
I mean, it's better than nothing.
Oh, it's better than nothing.
Certainly not what you
but
would
it's,
have
it's
otherwise.
They came in with that government. It's a protection agent and protection.
He gave the PG.
I'll have to listen to my tape again.
Yeah.
He told us about that.
It may be in some of those
papers
there that I got there. It's PGCI or something like that. Government pension. Pension, government, something or other. In case of companies going into bankruptcy and taken over by the federal government,
you don't get
any cost of living raises or anything
It's
just a flat, and that's it. Now a lot of people, they said that you had to have 10 years in there. A lot of people they have taken a lump sum. Rather than brought out once
they
come
back.
Yeah, some people have been offered. Sometimes they get in contact with them. Other people have taken a lump sum rather than draw it out. Whatever is best
for you.
I prefer to take mine once a month. My husband and I both.
Maybe know that's
now,
coming.
Yeah. Now my husband only gets $90 a month.
It's a percentage, but it's nowhere near what you would.
Oh, no. At the time, we should have been gay. At the time of this, back in 85, had we retired at that time, back in 1975, the pension was $800 a month.
Oh.
So you can see the difference right there.
Yeah, that. Oh. Now, see, that was what Oldsmobile was paying. We had the same contract that Oldsmobile.
Oh, you
now,
did?
Now, yes, we had the same, basically the same contract. Real was, back in 75, if you retired, you would get $800 a month. That's what Oldsmobile was getting.
Yeah.
Oldsmobile now gets $1,800 to $2,000
wow.
a month when they retire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah. About the average worker over there at Oldsmobile gets $2,000.
I think that's more than
what
professors get when we...
$18,000 to $2,000 But
I heard, too, I've heard in several of the men we've talked to have talked about suicides and...
We've had seven different people commit suicide. Seven different people commit suicide. Indirectly.
To
what happened that they couldn't see their way to go on.
Their whole life is kind of just down the drain.
Several deaths I'm sure this had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Indirectly, it was related to that.
Mm-hmm.
To stress and not being able to, and most of these people were all supervisors. I mean, they weren't union. So see, they weren't getting anything.
Yeah, they had no protection.
They had no protection whatsoever.
Yeah.
Hmm, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that to us also. I can't remember which one now.
Yeah. They weren't getting anything. And their insurance and everything was taken away from them.
Yeah.
After that day when you went down and it was padlocked and the next day it was still locked, any of you workers ever called together somewhere for a meeting and this was explained to you that this is... We're out of business, you're off the job, you will be getting something, or...
Not that I remember.
We just read it in the paper.
We just read it in the paper. I don't remember ever having, like you say, being called back. We had several meetings before and between times. Every time a new company took over, we always had an assembly after work or something like that, where they... poured out the beer or the pop or the coffee or so on and so forth about introducing the new bosses.
Here we go again.
Here we go again. We had several of them and things were looking good or things were bad at the time, but they were cut back here, but we'll make a go of it.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember if ever going back. Maybe somebody could jog my memory, but I don't remember of ever going back. I went back several times and talked to the sales department was kept open. For quite a long time.
Sales.
Who worked in that sales department?
Was it sales? Rankin was an export sales.
Yeah. He was export sales. No, this was I can remember going back and sitting there, but you know, I can't think who I went back and because I can remember sitting there the day that they went to court. I can remember the last time that they went to court. There was about... I wish I could remember who it was. But there was about five of us. The attorney that we had representing Real was downstairs and he came upstairs and he told us that he was going to Grand Rapids to the court.
Ooh.
And he said, "Don't worry. I have a buyer."
He says,
"I have a buyer." This was the last day that they went to court. He says, "I have a buyer." And he says, "So don't worry." He says, "We'll be back in business. I'll call you." And I think court was like 10 o'clock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat there till 1 o'clock waiting for his telephone call from Grand Rapids saying that everything had gone through, that he had this buyer, and I don't know who it was, that was going to come through and buy. It was
never happened.
Never happened. It never was.
Oh, it never was?
Oh, it never was.
That was
a lie. It was just a lie.
Oh.
It was just a lie. Just a lie.
This was an attorney that was Real's attorney, but this is obviously Capert's plan.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and this was told to tell all the rest of
you. Well, it was a bunch of... I think it was five. See, the place was closed. The place...
Mm-hmm.
But we could get in, and I can't remember who was in that office. One of the girls was there, and Will Johnson was probably there. Will Johnson was there. He was sales manager at the time. I think he was there. know where Will is now. God only knows. But his secretary was there, and she would take any incoming calls or anything like that, because they were still scheduling if anybody was calling for trucks, or of course they were always calling for the latest, the salesmen or the vendors or the suppliers, you know, or these different companies that were ordering trucks were still hoping that they could get their trucks, you know, they could put their order in and still, you know.
I just can't. This thing happening, far-reaching, and
it was all over.
Catastrophe.
Yeah, calls. I can remember sitting there. This is terrible, but I cannot remember who the secretary was. I can't remember who I went in there to see. Somebody had to jog my memory.
But you could go.
But we could walk in and out at any time we want. So I only lived a couple of blocks from Rio at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would walk over there. Lift my morale to see what was going on,
Sure.
But I remember that day very well, very distinctly, of him, the attorney, saying, "No, don't." Well, there was more than myself. There was probably half a dozen of us sitting there, because people would drift in and out all day long, trying to find out the latest news going on, or if there was anything that they knew, or anything like that. Because our spirits were pretty low by that time, I can remember him saying, "Don't worry, I've got a buyer, and we'll be back in business." So we're thinking, "Oh boy, good." We're sitting there waiting for his phone call. About 1 o'clock, we finally decided
there wasn't
going to be any phone call. That we'd been, and then we read it in the paper, of course, the next day or that night. I think then, at that time, we were getting a paper twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we used to get a paper twice a day?
Yeah, I remember that.
But it wasn't about ready to happen. Because most always the paper would say, "Well, the reel's gone, the reel's almost gone, it's not gone, there's still hope," you know, and so on and so forth.
One of the gentlemen we talked to, in some papers that Mr. Rankin gave me, that's where I got it, from something I was reading that he loaned me, that the truck sales were up.
Oh, yes.
And it wasn't as if, sales were down, nobody wanted to order those products. They were up.
Oh, yeah. We had more orders on the books the day that we went out for bankruptcy than we'd ever had in the history of Rio.
Isn't that incredible?
And people were calling in, begging, put their names on the list. "I'll take one, I'll take 10, I'll take as many trucks as I can get."
Because our
truck sold for $50,000 to $100,000 a piece at that time. Oh, yes. Our truck sold for $50,000 at that time. And these different vendors of these different companies were ordering, "I'll take one, I'll take two, I'll take whatever I can get," where they would order, like, ordinarily order just one or two. "Put me on your list." They wanted to make sure they were on that list, that when we went back to building trucks, they were going to get it, see?
Wow.
They were going to be on that list for those trucks. And as Ed said, yes, we had more trucks on the order at that time. But nobody could buy us the way Capert had us set up.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't come in and buy the business, because you had to buy the business. That was one business. You had to buy the land. That was another. You had to buy the buildings. That one. So you had the business. You had to pay $300,000. Then you had the buildings, which were no good at all, but you had to have the buildings to take there. They were another $100,000. Then you had the land that you had to buy. See, he had taken all this property and split it into different companies. So nobody could come in and say, "Well, I'll give you $100,000 for your business, or $1 million, or whatever." Because Capert had split it all into several different companies.
Can you imagine
even trying to untangle that?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
That's another reason he did it. Yes. You buy this, you buy that. He had it all broken down into, and if you will notice in his iron paper there, he did the same thing with his mobile company, mobile business. Every little corner that he could take a hunk out of for tax reasons or otherwise.
Yeah.
That's what he did. So nobody could come in and buy us. It was impossible.
Hmm.
to come up with that much money. Come up with that much money.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And then on top of that, they would have to, most people would have to come in and tear by the chair those buildings down or put up new ones, because those were, as you say...
Well, those buildings were, they were adequate to build the trucks and things like that there. Those people had worked in those buildings, so they were willing to go along with that there, and as you made money, but you had to have people that put the money back into the company, not take it out take it somewhere else. You had to reinvest. There was many, many people. In fact, there were, at one time, several people were trying to get together and buy the business.
Yeah, we heard about that.
Yeah.
Oh,
tried
employees
buying it. But they couldn't, because they couldn't come, it was impossible to come up with the amount of money that he wanted to buy these different
parts. Even if it had the money, just the legal tangle.
The legal tangle. Yes.
Mm. Well, that was so daunting.
Yes. It was terrible.
Hmm.
Oh, it really hurt.
We've heard that from everybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It certainly...
From the, levels.
Yes.
Every level.
But as I said, not even the supervisors themselves had any inkling that was what was going to happen.
That's the first time I've heard that. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Sad.
Very, very sad.
But imagine how he was able to keep everybody from knowing. I mean, just by not being there, I suppose.
Just by that not being there.
Yeah.
Mildred, his...
What a slick...
Yeah, his...
We heard about her, too.
Oh, yeah.
What do you know about Mildred? I'm interested in this.
I don't know anything about
We've heard
her.
A lot of gossip about that.
Yeah, you hear a lot of gossip.
I've heard that she was the hatchet man, that when somebody got fired, she was the one that...
She did it. She did all that, yes. Well, she was the one that was there. See, he never was there. And when he did come there, it would be at night, you know.
Oh, really?